Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back. I'm so excited to talk to Linda, who is amazing. She's a physician. She's in Chicago. And most importantly, she has seemingly found the lid to her pot. And I know you guys love love stories because they're relatable. And not long ago, Linda was kind of sitting where you're sitting. So without further ado, I'm going to bring the guest of the hour, my good friend, the beautiful Linda. Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm so excited.
Thank you.
I'm so excited.
And it's good to see you. Even if though it's virtual, you look gorgeous as always.
You look gorgeous. I'm sure if you guys haven't watched the videos on YouTube, watch this because you can see her gorgeous blue eyes, her streaming wavy blonde hair. She looks amazing. So, Linda, kind of give us your demographic. Tell us about you and just tell us your story and we'll just riff.
Okay. So basically I grew up in St. Louis. I have an older brother. We had a dog. I had parents. My parents were, they have a great love story on their own.
Oh, they do.
How they met. Yeah, they have a great story.
How did they meet, just for the record?
Because my parents are German immigrants or were, and my father had come to the U.S. and he had gotten, part of his visa, he had to enroll in the draft. So he was drafted for the Korean Army in 1957, 58, something like that. And when he went in, he asked if he could be stationed back in Germany, which they did. So when he was stationed back in Germany, he and a variety of European people who were also part of the American Army had this ragtag soccer team. And they were playing against a team in my mother's hometown. And afterwards, he and one of his friends went dancing and he met her at this dance hall. My parents were they're the fun loving beer drinking Germans, not that they weren't, pretty strict as well. But he tells a story that he went up to her because she had big boobs and they both laughed uncontrollably about it. He danced with her the whole night and he had to go back to his army barracks, but made a point of seeing her and they had this relationship for any period, for the period of time they could. And then he had to go back to the U.S. So they got married very quickly within 5 months of meeting. And here's my mother not really speaking much English and my father wanting to live the American dream, and they come to the U.S. and, the rest is history. So it's a good story. Before my mother passed away, they were together for 59 and a half years. So they were looking forward to their 60th wedding anniversary. So kind of sad, but they had their ups and downs, but overall I had a solid, normal childhood.
Mm.
But I had parents who were, we spent quality time together. If you talk about love languages, but we didn't, they weren't very expressive as far as like the whole I love yous. So that's kind of what I grew up with. Not that I knew that I was loved, but it wasn't
words of affirmation.
not a ton. So flash forward, I went to medical school. I never really had problems dating. I would get to know someone or they were friends of friends and then we would date. I mean, I never had this huge having to look for someone to date. As far as like retrospectively looking at my type, when I kind of think about it, when I had to do that exercise with you, I'm like, oh gosh, I guess there was kind of a type. They all, you know, I don't have anything bad to say about the old boyfriends. Very nice guys, really, you know, overall nice people, driven. A lot of them went into surgery, so it kind of gives you that personality. Maybe a little bit of commitment phobes, maybe a little bit of, they were the guys that would get things done and maybe kind of be known to other people as jerks, but I always thought, you know, but they were nice to me.
Nice so that was to kind you, of, but not to
they
others.
Were nice to me. A lot of ladies, a lot of them are still single or have,
they're out there. They're on the app.
They're out there. They're out there.
Right. And on a side note, nice to us, but not nice to others can be a red flag in relationships, as you know, because you went through Smart Dating Academy and you got the phases of red flags. So that is certainly something that can come to that kind of turns on us at a certain point, usually in a lot of these relationships. So keep an eye on that, ladies and gentlemen, as you're moving through the dating process.
For sure, for sure. And then, I don't know. I mean, I was a serial monogamist. I dated a number of people for a few years at a time. But nothing really ever went to marriage. And, you know, it's not like I had bad breakups. It was, I don't know, it just didn't happen. And all of a sudden I'm turning 40. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know,
oh my gosh.
I had this, panic ensues. So, what do I do as an industrious, you know, female, you know, professional female? I start marketing myself. I talk to everybody I know. I get on, and these are relatively new at the time. I get on the dating apps and, you know, just, you know, go on a bunch of first dates. And then I meet who ended up being my husband. And, you know, he checked the boxes, right? Mm. The stereotypical boxes. I mean, he was professional and, you know, looked well put together and smart and, you know, had a good sense of humor and great. We start dating and now I look back and I was love bombed and I had never been love bombed. I didn't even know, you know, like it isn't really even until I was getting divorced and reading about all the stuff, I'm like, oh, that's what that was. I mean, he was the, you know, the flowers, the poetry. He said that he loved me within the first couple weeks of us dating. He asked me, we were talking about marriage within the first 6 weeks. And yeah, I had those butterflies. I had anxiety about it. And I rationalized it that like, oh, well, this is how I should have been loved all along. This is what love is. And, oh, this is what they, you know, this is the rom-com, you know, thing of all of a sudden that you see them and then they're just madly in love with you. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, my anxiety is I'm the one who has the commitment issues. I'm the one who's not being open. I need to relax. I need to accept this, you know. I'm the problem with this anxiety, not the situation.
So you turn this into a me problem, meaning I'm being too picky. I need to just chill out this anxiety thing. You know, it's me. I have the commitment issues. So your body was telling you something.
Yes. Yes. And I chose to ignore, you know, I changed the narrative, right? You know,
you changed the narrative and like, a lot of great, successful, responsible people, what do? Is we point the finger back at ourselves first. It must be something I did. This is my fault. I'm being too picky. I'm the commitment phobe. And actually, this is part of the whole love bombing scheme. It's like predatory to those instincts.
Right, right. And, you know, we were... We got married about 2 years or so after we met. And it wasn't like there was anything glaringly horrible. I mean, he wasn't verbally abusive or never physically abusive or anything like that. But he was never trustworthy. he was never, you know, there was a lot of the, I couldn't get a hold of him and I'm being needy if I try to get a hold of him, but if he can't get a hold of me immediately, then I'm
hell breaks
not,
loose.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Are you cheating on me?
Right. Yeah. What are you doing? Who are you with? What's going on? Right. There was a lot.
Right.
And, I'd never had that either. Right. This was all kind of very new to me. And, I had this and still do, I have this great circle of friends, and I'm very lucky that I have just a lot of fabulous people in my life. And I love to cook. So I'd have these dinner parties and we'd have people over and I'd have different groups. And I like mixing different people who don't know each other and different ideas and just, you know, and he would start saying little things to me, just chipping away. Like, and he would say things like, you know, you make people feel like it's uncomfortable to leave at night. You know, like they want to go home and you don't, then you're pulling out another bottle of wine and you're making people feel uncomfortable. And, didn't you see so-and-so is rolling their eyes when you said that? You really need to be careful when you talk about these things. Like, and I would say, God, you know, and I was horrified. I was like, oh my gosh, I mean, I'm overall a nice person. I mean, oh my gosh, all these years I've been putting my friends out. All these years I've been saying these things. And, you know, what happens is slowly.
So hurtful.
Right. And it's, you know, and I'm still looking at it that he's telling me these things out of a place of love that like, right. Oh, this is how you can be better. Because who doesn't want to be a better person? Right. We all strive to be better.
You think it's constructive feedback. And yet you're like, right. Oh my God, why didn't anybody tell me this before? Like, am I that next bottle of wine? They all wanted to leave. How did I miss that?
Right. And I think myself is pretty good at reading people, not, you know. And so I'm, you know, so what ends up happening? I start having fewer dinner parties, right? Mm. I don't see my friends as much. I start becoming just very slowly kind of smaller and smaller. All the activities that, I really love to do that when we initially met, he would say that he was either interested in doing or that he also did, like all of a sudden, none of those things were happening. I mean, I was doing triathlons and I quit, you know, now I don't have, you know, he's like, oh yeah, I do those too. But then he never would run with me or cycle with me. And so then it's like, okay, well, to be with this person, I'm going to do less and less. And all of a sudden, all those things that were part of who I was, you know, or added to it, I'm starting to just be less and less. And I was aware of it, kind of like, this is not who I am. But then I was also on this mode of, well, this is part of married life, right? I mean, you have to compromise, you know, things aren't always going your way. And, you know, I'll start doing activities for the two of us that we're going to, you know, that we can bond. And I was perpetually trying to do those things and was kind of, it just never came to fruition.
You kept trying. You made yourself smaller and smaller, tried to chameleon into what you thought he wanted.
Right. And then I think it was probably about 5-7 years in was the first confirmation of infidelity. And he deflected a lot of that, didn't take a lot of ownership of it, but was outwardly saying that he was remorseful and that things, you know, that I was taking it out of context and that I thought it was a much bigger thing than it was. And it was really, this woman was interested in him and he was being polite to her and he was helping her, but it really wasn't this relationship that I created in my head.
So right. You found out about this accidentally.
She left a letter on my car.
Ah, okay.
So now
you to know.
Yes. So now, and this is the thing, and I think it's so hard for a lot of people because you think like, God, how could she stay with them? How could she not believe me? How could she not know this is going on? And it's, you get into this, you want to believe your person, right? You want to believe the person you're married to. You want things to work. And there was some of the things in her letter that were a little crazy. That she seemed a little unhinged herself. So at that time I chose my marriage, right? We're going to work on this. We're going to be better. I'm going to be better.
Linda, was her letter on your windshield very calculated? Was it a letter basically saying, I want you to know that this is happening, or please let him go? Like, her, what was her MO? What was her motive in contacting you?
Now you're down for this. Yes, but she was letting me know that he had, that he was narcissistic. Okay. And so at that point, I think their relationship had ended, and she was kind of saying like, danger, girl, you should get out. Like, what are you doing with this guy? You need to leave. And I, like I said, there were some things in it that were a little quirky too. And so I kind of looked at it as, okay, well, this is sour grapes. This is
right.
The person who is his mistress, and he's already kind of telling me that she wanted more. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe there is some truth to what he's saying.
Totally yeah. Makes sense. And thanks for clarifying it. I hope that wasn't too intrusive.
Oh, no, not at all.
Just in the sense that it's like, what if was the motivation of this person to leave you this letter? And now it makes perfect sense. It's like, wow, you know, I just want to warn you about your husband. You're like, okay, this is bananas in 100 different ways. And I'm sure reading that, where you would see some things that seemed a little unhinged. And then you have your husband telling you, this isn't true. See, she looks crazy. And like you're saying, you have hope and you want to believe that your partner is your partner. It's a very human instinct.
Right. And I think that's the hard part, because, you know, so anyway, I did tuck this letter. I kept the letter until after I was divorced. I did recently, or within the last year or two, shred it, but I kept it. Don't know why, or maybe I do. But kept it, and, you know, things kind of go on. And then I, you know, that my spidey senses are up, that there's someone else.
Oh, and how long later?
Later. This is probably another 5 years later.
5 years later. Okay.
And so I'm, you know, I still want to believe, but things don't always add up. And anyway, I end up, kind of, there's confirmation of that there's at least, as I came to find out later, a lot more other women, but at least one other woman. I was like, okay, I started calling lawyers at this point. And I happened upon the lawyer who I ended up using, who I tell him my story, and I said, you know, I just kind of want advice of kind of, you know, I'm not really ready yet to get divorced, but I just kind of, what should I look at? Like, how should I prepare myself and what should I do? I don't know what to do. And he said, why aren't you going through with this? This sounds horrible. You seem like a nice person. Like, why are you staying?
Right.
Right. And I said, well, you know, I think that, ultimately, you know, things were getting kind of miserable between us anyway, and things had been more distant. And I said, I think he's going to divorce me. And I think it's going to go much easier if he's the one who initiates the divorce. I just want to be ready, because I think it's happening. I think it's around the bend. And he's kind of quiet for a second. And he said, you know, I've seen your movie.
Many times.
And I said, yes, because, you know, the one where the woman's in the negligee and she picks up the phone cord and it goes dead. And you know what's going to happen next. He's like, I know what's going to happen next here. And I'm like, well, tell me. He said, well, you have to go through it, but I'm just going to tell you this part. He's never going to divorce you, ever. He's not, because you're nice, you're successful, you're taking care of things. Why would he ever divorce you? There's no reason for him to divorce you. You know, he's having his affair. Why? And I'm like, okay. So it took a while.
How did that feel?
It was, you know, of course, I had this conversation with him as I'm getting ready to walk into work, right? And I was just kind of numb, because that phrase of "I've seen your movie" is something that one of my friends is a psychiatrist. She uses that. And I'm thinking, holy crap. I mean, it's like, I know that he's seen my movie. I just haven't seen my movie. And so it's like, it did put the, okay, I need to start moving forward with things. And I did, you know, we tried doing some marriage counseling, whatever. I tried doing all of the stereotypical things to kind of make things work. And you know, of course, true to form, I'm the one who files, right? So
more women file than men nationwide.
Yes. So we go through the divorce, and you know, there was periods of the divorce where, I had a couple epiphanies. One was, you know, as you're separating the stuff, and my ex had gotten very fixated on like little things like, well, you know, how much am I going to get for the shovels? I'm like, what? And so, you know, I'm calling my lawyer up, like, going, oh my gosh, I don't know how. And he's like, well, you know, we can go through every grain of sand, or you can just kind of give him the beach and then we'll renegotiate from there. And I was like, okay. And I kind of thought about it. And he's like, think about what you really, really, really want. What do you really need from your home? What's super important to you? What do you need to have? Because that's what we're going to fight for. The rest of it, just let it go. And that's what I did. I just kind of like, you want the shovels? All yours. You want
the shovels.
It was so freeing. It was like the best. Like as soon as I started doing that, it was just like, in fact, I started wanting to give him stuff. Like it was, and I did when I packed up some of the stuff for the house, and I'm like, huh, this panini maker, I haven't used this ever. He can have it.
Here, make a panini.
Right.
With your shovel.
Right. Right. For the place that you have that has no yard, whatever. I mean, just, you know, take whatever. He was very fixated on being sure that he got all the stuff. Take all the stuff.
Bye.
You know, and at the end of it, we do our final divorce, and he said, I just want to say to you, you're going to be okay. I'm like, okay. And he's like, no, like, you're great. You're going to be okay. You're going to find somebody. It's just, you just have great energy. You're a nice person. You're going to be okay. And I said, all right. And he's like, you know, every pot has a lid. And it resonated with me because my mother had passed away not too much prior to that. And that was one of her sayings. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, okay. And I said, well, you know, Jason, here's how it is. You know, you kind of panic, it's boiling over, and you grab any old lid, and then things are spewing out. And then the next thing you know, I'm in a Zoom meeting with you getting a divorce. You know what he said?
Yeah.
He said, take your time, pick a better lid.
Take your time, pick a better lid, straight from the horse's mouth.
So I started with, you know, after kind of processing the divorce, I started with a couple of mantras, which one of them was, well, you know, I did all these fun, interesting things. And if I want to meet somebody who's interesting, then I need to start doing these fun, interesting things again. Because
yay.
Who wants to be with somebody who's sitting at home all the time, who does nothing? I mean, you can't ask to meet somebody who's this fabulous person and not be fabulous yourself. So I'm like, I'm going to do things to try to make myself back to who I was and feeling who I was and being fabulous. And I also, started with the mantra of saying yes. So when people would say, do you want to meet so-and-so? Yes, I do. Do you want to go out to dinner? Yes, I do. Do you want to go paddleboarding with me? Yes. You know, anything that was not detrimental and could open doors for me and seemed like fun, I just said yes to. So I went on a bike riding tour through Sicily. I went through a bike riding tour through Portugal. I climbed Machu Picchu. All part of my yes. And, you know, I'm still trying to meet people and very shy about doing any of the dating apps because that didn't work so well for me. So
that led you to your first marriage.
Right. Failure.
Yeah. No.
So I start marketing myself to all my friends. And I'm at a medical school reunion of sorts, and very close friend of mine and I, we go out for breakfast, and the reunion was literally right between our birthdays, and we're fighting over the check. Like, she's like, no, I'm going to pay for you for your birthday. No, I'm going to pay for you for your birthday. And so I finally said, well, Laura, here's the thing. I'm going to pay, but you're going to do something for me. And she's like, okay. And she is very close to this one woman, Dana, who you know very well.
Dr. Dana,
who I know, and she's lovely, right? She's a great, positive,
such a good human,
fun, just a little dynamite, right? I mean,
she's a little firecracker of energy and love.
So, but I don't, you know, I didn't really know Dana that well. And so I said, you know, look, Dana and I are in the same city. Dana herself had at that point recently gotten remarried, and her circle of friends was completely different than mine. I'm like, will you just maybe approach Dana, and maybe she and John, maybe they know somebody, or maybe they can kind of get me involved with something else. Like I want, you know, maybe I can be part of their circle, or maybe there's someone they know or whatever. And she's like, of course. So here comes the big gala event. And I mean, I'm almost tackled by Dana. I mean, she's like, runs up to me.
And she's like 100 pounds soaking wet and five tall.
Yes. And she's like, okay, I've already talked to John and we're thinking this, but you know what? You need to meet my friend Bella. I'm like, okay. And she's like, she's a dating coach. I'm like, okay, dating coach. But what's my mantra? Yes, I'm going to meet Bella.
So fun and so cute. And you and I were just talking about this offline, that Dana has become a little Yenta on her own. So Dana, you need to meet my friend Bella. And episodes ago, we did a love story with Christy Reynolds, who recently got married to her amazing boyfriend, fiance, Greg. And they got married in the Bahamas. And Dana said, and John, right, the Yentas, you need to talk to our friend Bella. And that's how it happened. So now here you are.
Right. So I call this woman Bella.
This crazy lunatic.
I'm like, I have no idea. I know nothing about you. I know that you're a dating coach. I have no real, but okay. Dana told me to do this. She's very excited about it. I'm in the mode of saying yes. I'm going to call. And we had a 30-minute conversation that I think turned into like an hour and a half.
As you and I do.
Right. Because it turns out that we have crossed paths, maybe not actually meeting each other, but both members of the same health club and some different other people that we know and different things. It's like, oh, different places that we shop.
Anne Fontaine, Calvin Tran.
Right.
So it's like, we like our nice clothes.
Right. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to go in. I'm doing this. She seems great. Positive energy. I apparently, you know, and you start talking about doing the apps, and I'm like, I do not have the bandwidth for the apps. I just don't. You're like, you don't have to have the bandwidth. We've got this.
I give you the bandwidth.
Right. I am the bandwidth. and it's true, right? Because it was very daunting to think about being in my 50s and going back and meeting people. And I remember saying to you, like, look, I'm in decent shape. I'm not in perfect shape. And, I'm successful and I'm financially secure and all these things. If I were a man, I'd be flush with bitches, I think is my exact words to you.
I'd be flush with bitches if I was a successful, in shape dude in my 50s.
Right. And I'm like, meanwhile, I'm going to be with somebody who's in their 70s, who can barely walk.
And by the way, there's a lot of hot 70-year-olds, if you haven't seen The Golden Bachelor, right?
So
yes.
Right. So, but, and you're like, well, then, no, it is. It's kind of like, it isn't as easy, as easy as you think it is. When they get on these, there's a lot, it's hard for them in different ways.
Men have it hard. Women have it hard. We all do. The grass is always greener.
Right. And you said, well, but do you really want to be with the guy who's dating the 30-year-old at 50? That's no, we're, he's no. not even, he's not even, our, we don't even want him. What are you talking about? That's not even gross. Like, keep him away. We're not even going to go there. Don't worry about that. And you followed it with, yeah, you're going to be easy.
I'm like, you're going to be easy.
That's like, really? No. I didn't get married till I was almost 40. And, and then I had this whole disaster that's going on. And now I'm in my 50s and I don't see how this is going to be easy at all.
And I told you what your mom told you. There's a lid to your pot.
Mm-hmm. There it is again, right? So it's like, okay. So we do all the stuff. So I had my interview, so to speak. I don't even know. I don't recall your terminology for our kind of in-depth meeting.
We call it our jumpstart, and that kicks off our one-on-one coaching practice. And usually people are on with us for a year and it's 3 hours. And so, yes, during that session, we kicked it off and you made reference to it a couple of minutes ago as we really kind of identified, okay, yeah, maybe you have a type. And this is what people do. I want him to be successful and fit and in his 50s and blah, 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 and funny and smart and lather, rinse, repeat. And we do that over and over again. But then we went through and we identified the people in your life that make you really happy and identified those characteristics. And then
yes.
You remember that. And and how did that impact you?
Well, for me, it was like, so the word that kept coming up with my friends, and because it's true, is that they're kind.
Yeah.
And that was not one of my descriptors. Why was that not a number one descriptor for someone you meet? And it's not. You see these people talking, I don't mean these people, but you see people talking about what they want. And they'll get into these craziness, like, I want to meet somebody, like, if they don't have a passport, I don't want anything to do with them. Why? Maybe they want a passport. Maybe they want to travel the world.
Yeah.
What you're taking it off of that? I remember seeing like one woman say, they have to floss their teeth twice a day. What? Or she's done. That's it. Like, that's her. It's like, but no one's saying they have to be kind. Right. I mean,
such great insight. Right. And that exercise really, like, it's so foundational in how we search for partners, how we really prioritize these characteristics in romantic partners so that we don't end up in that nasty swamp of divorce all over again. And, and for those of you who've been listening for a while, we've had zero divorces in 14 years. So when you follow the process, it can work. And, you know, there are times that we take detours from the process, though. So let's jump into what happened. We did your photo shoot. You had such a ball. Your photos are gorgeous. And part of her photos will be in her story on our website page. So if you go to Smart Dating Academy podcast, you'll see her gorgeous photos from our photo shoot. So now what happens? You're all ready to go online.
All ready to go online. I get online. I'm with Lindsay. And you know, we do that. And she was great. And I never had the problem with, you know, communicating. I had problems with picking, right? It was the picker that was the problem.
It's your picker.
Right. So she'd be like, oh no, delete. And then be like, oh, I don't know. This one seems kind of, you know, kind of boring. No, you're going to keep going with this one. Give this guy a chance. Nope. He's not saying anything offensive. Everything is, you know, everything is kind. Everything is appropriate. This like, you know, so we did that, and I went out on a few dates, talked to a number of people on the phone, and overall, I would say completely different experience, right? I mean, got rid of the people who make us get offline pretty quickly, and really had kind of a, overall, I mean, most of the people who I talked to, there were some duds, but most of the people who I made it to a phone call with were very nice people. And
good people.
Yeah. But I had, you know, marketed myself to everyone, right? And so I have one friend who is a super extrovert, queen of extroverts, and she knows everybody, and she lives in a different town. She lives in one of the suburbs, and I'm like, okay, Sarah Jane, you know, there's gotta be somebody that, you know, there's gotta be somebody this and this. And I'm kind of bugging her or whatever. And we're both on this Facebook group. It's a combination of physicians and veterinarians. And it's a very fun group, has nothing to do about dating whatsoever. It has to do more with the veterinarians will ask the physicians questions. The physicians will ask the veterinarians questions, you know. Apparently we both have, both sides have, veterinarians apparently have a lot of health issues. We have a lot of pet issues. it all kind of works out. We complain about the state of healthcare, about, you know, how hard it is to, you know, to get adequate staffing. You know, it's a combination of things. And in the process, one of the veterinarians makes a comment along the lines of, does it suck for dating as much as it does for the veterinarians, for the physicians? Like, it's just like the apps, you know. And, you know, my friend Sarah Jane's like, oh, did you see that comment from Brett? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, yeah. She's like, he hates the apps too. I'm like, mm-hmm. And she's like, you should slide into his DMs. I'm like, do you even know what that means? Like, what are you talking about? Like,
Sarah Jane, do you know what that means?
Like, you know what you're saying.
Slide into his bed, slide into his DMs.
Slide into his DMs. And I'm like, no, I'm not a psycho. I don't know this guy. I mean, I know that he's a veterinarian. I know, you know, that he
Brett's
seems,
the vet.
Yes, he seems very, very kind with his responses, and he's smart. And so I violated my say yes, and I said no. So she cyber stalked him, like as any good friend would. And
Sarah Jane, God love her.
And she comes back, and she's kind of keeps bugging me. And she's like, no, really, like I've been kind of following him more, and he's kind and he's smart and he's very thoughtful with his responses. And I think he's like you. I think he's a good match for you. And I'm like, but you don't know him either. She's like, I just think you need to slide into his DMs. And I said, I'm not going to do it. And she's like, well, I am. I said, knock yourself out. He's just going to think you're crazy. And he did. She marketed me to him. And so he ended up messaging me. Very simple, just saying like, you know, and I actually looked back at them this morning, trying to remember. He just basically said, you know, he's very flattered, very honored, you know, clearly I have this friend that's trying very hard to introduce us. And so he just says, so I'll just say a simple hello, and just left it at that. It was very nice, very simple, you know.
See, that's how you slide into somebody's DMs.
Apparently, nice, I did not
very
know.
Very kind, very simple. You don't need a, hey, baby, I'm Brett the Vet. How about we, I don't know.
Right.
I'm not good at lines. Have some puppies? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. No, it was very, just very kind and simple and not, you know, he took away the creepiness pretty quickly, right? That can happen, right? So I respond back and thank him for, you know, kind of dealing with my friend Sarah Jane, who apparently really sold me. And then I just said, you know, kind of, I don't know what, you know, kind of like, what do you do next? And so I just asked him a random question. And I asked him who his favorite Bond was and why. And it's just a silly question, right? It's very, like, and we were talking about this past weekend, and he's like, yeah, that was a little odd. But he leaned into it, right? So he gave me, and I had used that on, he's going to listen to this, but no, honey, you weren't the first with this. But his response was the best, which was very thoughtful, just like he is. Just this, he said he went with Sir Roger Moore, and he explained why he went with him and who his second was, and this, and then he followed it with a question, right? Like you're supposed to. And he follows it with a question about movies and about musical theater and what are my likes and dislikes. And it just snowballs from there. And now we're messaging
talking,
back and forth.
And talking and talking.
Yes. And it's getting, you know, more in depth, and I'm asking him harder questions and vice versa. And we're getting to know each other. And so then I get the Lindsay Bella response. So is this guy going to be like a pen pal, or what's the deal here?
Let's get this offline. Let's have a conversation.
Right. Like this is right. This sounds great. Yeah. He sounds good. Great. Now what? And so, yeah, we talk a little bit. We're texting a lot, talking this and this. And then I'm like, okay, I'll rip off the Band-Aid. And I sent him a message along the lines of, you know, you seem like a really great guy. And I can't decide if this is completely crazy and we should, like, this shouldn't really go on, or if I should have met you yesterday. You know, I'm vacillating between the two. And
where does he live? Sorry.
So he lives 400 miles away.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, did you hear that? Not 4, not 40, 400 miles away from her. Okay. Now, right. You're corresponding back and forth, knowing we live 400 miles apart.
Yes. But you know what? There's so many things that we connected on so many different levels. And so I'm just like, you know, why isn't this guy in my backyard? I want to meet him tomorrow. Do I really want to do this long distance thing? It was just
all of the whatever. Things.
So, but his response was the response that I need to hear, which was, when you're done vacillating and you want to meet, I would love to meet you. No pressure. It was just, yeah, I want to meet you too. And that immediately made me feel like, okay, I'm going to meet this guy.
I love it.
So, and then I went a little rogue.
A little rogue for a smart dater.
A little rogue. He came to Chicago and stayed with me, and we were kind of inseparable after that. So I did a little rogue.
I remember, I think I did the call with you the weekend after he stayed with you.
Yes. And you're like, well, let's, take a deep breath. I'm like, no. You know, and I would say in my defense, although we hadn't had like an in-person date, we had communicated. This had been a good 6-8 weeks where we were having daily communication. And,
totally. And
it wasn't just, oh, we had a couple, we slid into each other's DMs and then met up.
No, it was a lot.
we had talked about our family. We knew a lot about our values, a lot about things that we liked, disliked, things that what we wanted in the future, what we were looking for, what, you know, there was a, we had a lot of those discussions before we ever met in person.
And look, and I want you guys, listeners, to hear this. It's not, you know, we like slow dating. Okay. But now what Linda did with Brett, it's not really going rogue to some extent. It was taking time, being measured. They had a lot of conversations over 6 to 8 weeks. They're 400 miles apart. Okay. So they can't meet in person. But the beauty of that is it takes a lot of the physical pressure off of it. So you can just sort of old school, your parents met, right? Mm-hmm. And they communicated as much as they could when your dad was in the military, your mom was back at home. You communicate in that way, but all of the, oh my God, do I make out with them? Do I sleep with them? Do I do this? You get to know each other almost old school, like courting. You know, we had couples meet and fall in love over Zoom over COVID, so that by the time they met after 10 weeks, it was a done deal. On paper, it was their first meeting, but it really wasn't. And so you fall into that bucket.
It really wasn't. I mean, it was just a matter of actually having that face to face. And, you know, and he is exactly how he presented himself all along. I mean, he's been very consistent. Everything's been very consistent. It's been very easy. There's been no, I don't have any angst of, oh, he's, you know, he's out with somebody else, or he's doing something. Everything's very transparent. I don't worry about that whole butterfly anxiety thing is just not there.
Never has been.
Never has. Well, when I was picking him up for the airport, when the first time I met him, I was thinking like, this might be a little crazy.
That's like the excitement though, right? And you're like, wow, he's staying with me. This could either be really good or not so good. So it makes sense that you were a little excited / nervous, but it wasn't the anxiety of, for example, what could have happened? You spend 3 days with him and then he ghosts you.
Right.
And then you have that stomach flipping over, churning, looking at your phone. Those were the bad butterflies. This was excitement.
Yeah. And there was, it's been easy. Now, granted, we do have that 400 mile thing in between us. We have, you know, minor details. We both interestingly have, secondary homes that are in between us, that are more drivable. And so we do a combination of things. So we, you know, we've met at different places. We've been to each other, you know, to each other's city, as well as to these other secondary homes, and we just make it work. So it's, do I love that he's 400 miles away? No. Do I wish that he was with me every second? Yes. Yeah. Is it hard? It's hard in that I miss him, but it's not hard in the emotional, you know, is he going to be gone tomorrow? Is
the roller coaster hard?
No,
it's not. That's not the roller coaster hard. I got goosebumps with this. And I know, you know, what you said about this relationship has my favorite word, where I know a relationship is going to go the distance. It's the E word. It's easy. You said this is the easiest relationship I've ever had. And he's 400 miles away. So distance is no bound.
No, and I'm even wondering, I don't know if you have noticed, if I had like a distance in my thing, I put that down of like wanting somebody within like, probably like, I probably would have picked like 50 miles or something, or, you know, so it seems a little crazy, but it works. And we have schedules, you know, fortunately I can manipulate my schedule and he has a fairly set schedule. And so that we can work, that we can see each other, almost every other weekend for, you know, 3-4 days at a time. So it works, you know. So
every
we're very
weekend.
Fortunate.
Every other weekend. Wow, yeah. That's amazing. You guys are like the, you know, if I had to pick next door neighbors, I'd pick a physician and a vet. Like, what a great couple to live next door to.
We got you covered. Whatever you need.
Just exactly. Oh my gosh. And you've met the kids. Like, everything just sounds lovely and easy.
Yes. And yes. And I'd say his family's great. His kids are great. It's, you know, I didn't say this, kind of forgot to mention this, but in my, my ex-husband's profile, one of the things that he'd put in there was no drama.
Oh.
And I remember you saying like, oh no, that's a total red flag. And I'm like, how is that a red flag? He has my drama. And he was so much drama, right? I mean, they're like, oh no, no drama means that they're drama.
They're going to cause you drama because they're not going to take responsibility for their bad actions and they make you get small. And if you have a response, that's dramatic, but it's like you caused that.
Right. Mm. Right.
Mm. Wow. Amazing. Unbelievable. And I love your story so much because you walk through a lot of hellfire, right? You got a note on your windshield. That's the kind of note nobody wants to get, right? And you tried to stick with it. You tried to make it work. And thank God for your divorce lawyer who said, I've seen this movie happen and he's not going to file, and gave you that advice to basically start to take back your life again. And look at the inflection points of, man, what if that hadn't happened? What if I hadn't done that? And then your own mantra of, I'm strong. I'm going to get myself back. I'm going to be fabulous again. I'm going to do the things that you have big, beautiful energy. Like I said to you, you're going to be easy. You are so kind and fun and adventurous. And like, you're playful, right? Even though you've got this big job and big structured career, you have this other side to you that is super girly, fashionable, fun, light. I love dinner parties. I'm like, you're going to meet somebody. And it happened way faster than I thought it would. And thank goodness for Sarah Jane, our matchmaker. And we love Brett. We love Brett the vet. It's like we all called him from day one. And I know he's listening to this. So Brett, we're very glad you slid into her DMs. Thank goodness.
Yeah. And you know, and to his credit, he also was, I'd asked him like, well, why did you respond? You know, and he's like, yeah, you know, why not? Like,
yes,
you know, he was on that mode of also kind of being like, just saying yes. And I think that that needs to be kind of what more people need to do for so many things, right?
Absolutely. And do you have any gems you'd like to drop on a listener while you're here?
Oh gosh, I feel like I kind of dropped.
You dropped a lot of gems. Anything that I didn't ask you or any advice you want to give people that...
I would say it's just be open. Like, get out of your head. Go out, have fun. Say yes. What's the, you know... don't say yes to the serial killer. But, I mean, you know, go out and experience life and live life. And because if you're doing that, then you've already won, right? Mm-hmm. I mean... I just see people who get so sad that they aren't with somebody, whatever, and they're almost making themselves smaller too. Like, make yourself bigger, like make yourself open to experience and doing things and see what comes your way. And maybe it'll come your way and maybe it won't. But in the meantime, you got to experience life, and that's not a bad thing.
Oh, what great advice. And I'm so grateful that you chose to put your dating life in our hands, and very honored to have you as a client and as a friend.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I do think that you're probably going to have to give a little, subsidy to Dana and Sarah Jane at some point. You might need to hire them onto your team.
Takes a damn village to find love, people. I'm looking for stringers all over the place. Spread the love. And this is the thing, like, you put yourself out there, and because you said yes, you started to make great connections. You asked your friend, I forget what her name is, to introduce you to Dana.
Right. Well, yes. For Dana to to facilitate that with Dana, right? My friend Laura.
Laura, yeah. To facilitate it with Dana. Then Dana facilitates an introduction to me. Then Sarah Jane facilitates an introduction to Brett. So when you're open, when you're authentic, when you're telling people, yes, I'm open to this, good things can happen to you. And you're an elevator person. You're kind. And you're thoughtful and you're generous and you're fun and easygoing. And that just comes right back to you.
Right. Well, you know, be the person that you want to be with. Yeah. Right. I mean,
I love that. I love that so much. So thank you so much.
Thank
for
you.
Telling your love story. And how thank long you. Have you guys been together now? It's been a year.
We're approaching a year. Yeah.
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 Ladies and gentlemen, look at this. Say yes to everything. Have your friends help you. Have people working on your behalf. Get a dating coach who will make sure that, you know, even if you go rogue, you stay on track. And that you're picking for the right things and be open to the distance. Be open to different people, right? And say yes to everything that doesn't sound like a serial killer. So, and say yes to relationships that seem easy, even when someone might not be your type. And Sarah Jane stalked Brett and she didn't say, oh my God, he's so hot. He's got shredded abs. He is hot. I'm sure he's got shredded abs. But what she says is, I like his energy. I like how he sounds. He's thoughtful. He's smart. He's responsive. He's kind. She took your elevator people characteristics and looked for those in someone right. for you. And what's better than that? That is what we want you to do.
Right. And thank goodness for her.
Thank goodness for her and thank goodness for you. And we are so happy for your love. And smart daters, love is out there for you. Remember, have hope. Okay. It's a when, it's not an if. I am spraying you with my fire hose of psychotic optimism and hope. We're coming into peak dating season soon. If you need help, do something, say yes to something that's going to put you on track to meet the lid to your pot, right? As your mom said, as we said, you're going to find the lid to your pot. So thank you again, Linda, for joining us today with your incredibly inspiring story that you can meet someone on Facebook 400 miles away, right in the beginning of the dating process. So
yes. Well, thank you for having me.
All right, smart daters. With that, if you love this episode, give us a 5-star ranking. Tell us what you love about it. We read every single one. We love it. Sign up for our newsletter at smartdatingacademy.com so you can get all the news about Linda and Brett and everything else first. We love you and see you next week. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.